Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Every week, we discuss issues of concerns occurring in and out of the criminal justice arena, and everyone is afforded an opportunity to call in and discuss their concerns, experiences, and issues within the injustices being inflicted upon them. Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light, is an avenue or an outlet to allow for voices to be heard and resolutions to be considered and hopefully found. Today, we're going to have a special guest joining us to share his story of injustice and wrongful allegations of a crime. Lauren states he is innocent of a crime that he's been being committed, and his trial is coming up, and he wants everyone to know what's going on with his situation. With mass incarcerations in the United States, it's time to bring awareness and expose the lies, the corruption and deceit in our government's courts, policing, penal system, and beyond. The prisons are known as prisons for profit, as they continue to throw individuals, whether wrongfully convicted, first-time offenders, or other, into U.S. cages for life or life without parole sentences. It's time to stop. Criminal justice is long overdue, and this story will explain why we need to act on behalf of the incarcerated and those individuals whom they try to set up to join their money-making system of corruption. Lauren Bedwood has a story to tell, and I'm certain he is anxious to have his voice heard. So let's welcome our guest, Lauren Bedwood. And I'm sorry, I mispronounced your name, Lauren, so please excuse me. Lauren, I want to welcome you on the show, first of all. And can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes, I can hear you good. Do you want to introduce yourself to the audience, let them know a little bit about what's going on, and then we can go on from there?
Yes. My name is Lauren Bedwood, 38 years old. I'm currently located in the state of Vermont. So to summarize what the show is primarily about, I was incarcerated for a year and a half for a crime that I didn't commit. And I'm just here to share my story and in hopes of shedding some light. And it's still an ongoing case, so I just want to put that out there, that I do have trial next month. But for those who know about the case and don't really know specifics, this is a way to shed some light on the issue.
Okay, Lauren, I can tell you're nervous, and I want you to relax. One of the things is we've been doing this for a few years now, but I've been an advocate for over 25 years, and the audience knows, a lot of them know, people out in society, members of society, a lot of them know, they don't want to admit it, but they know exactly what's going on in the court system, in the prison system. When people come on, I don't want them to be nervous because they're the ones, and I say this all the time, there are victims out there, but there are also victims behind the prison walls. People don't understand a lot of times there are victims who turned perpetrators, who became offenders because of their traumatized background. People don't understand there's a lot of wrongfully convicted in the prison, and that's because we have a corrupt system. Can you talk more about your situation?
Yes. So I was, yes, and I'm very nervous. So just bear with me. So I was dealing with a woman that, was dealing with another guy, and in the paperwork, it stated that, you know, he's her man. He's a sugar daddy. So long story short, me and her have been dealing with each other for about a year and a half, and throughout the course of that relationship, she's been seeing this guy, which I knew about. It was a mutual understanding, and he basically takes care of her. She doesn't work, she doesn't do anything. He buys her, he gives her allowance, takes care of her daughter. You know, he buys her vehicles. He does everything for her. So one day he hired a private investigator because she was cheating, doing stuff with other men. So he hired a private investigator to follow her around. So the private investigator took pictures of me and her and went back to him. Me and her was in the vehicle at the time when she received the phone call from him saying that he's coming to get the red Lexus that he just bought her because he has the pictures of me and her in his hand, and he's going to cut her off and, you know, just basically not fund her anymore. So she broke down crying, and that's when I knew, you know, like, this guy, whoever he was, I didn't never seen him before and didn't really know who he was, but that's when I realized that he has a very strong hold over her. So go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you, this is involving another man, and usually situations like this happen when there are other men in the life of a couple, whether it's intentionally or whether it's accidentally. The thing is, we have mass incarceration in the United States, and we have a lot of situations like this. And I would like you to speak more on what you're being accused of, why you're being accused of it. And you're pretty much mentioning it with this sugar daddy, this man that's in the picture. The thing is, when you go to court, these things go back and forth, and it's a he said, she said thing. And so I'd like to know, you mentioned, or someone that called on your, or connected with me on your behalf, stated that you took a lie detector test, you passed it. There's things going on that's showing that you're not actually the person being accused or the one that did the crime, but yet prosecutors are trying to make it that way. And I will say prosecutors do things like this, because I know personally that they will turn things around, they will bring in false witnesses, they will lie, they will hide evidence, they do all these kinds of things. You need to talk more about what's going on right now with the penal system, I mean with the criminal justice system in the courts, and why you believe that these things are happening. If not, we'll talk more about it anyway. But this situation, do you have a child with this woman you're talking about?
No, I do not.
Okay, so there's no children involved in this situation?
No.
Okay. This man that came into her life, did she know him when the two of you were together?
So she met him probably about 2 or 3 years before. I've known her for probably about 18 years. So,
wow.
So my charges when I was incarcerated in 2020, I was incarcerated on domestic assault, stalking, and burglary. Those are the charges. 3 domestics, 2 burglary, and 1 stalking. So the next day when I went to court, they dropped the 2 burglaries because in the paperwork, she admitted to letting me in. The state wanted to say that I broke in or I kicked the door in or whatnot, but because it was said in the paperwork that she let me in, they had to drop the 2 burglary charges. So fast forward 9 days later, they have what's called an evidentiary hearing to see if they have enough evidence to hold me. So 9 days later, that morning, I have court. I'm supposed to have court at 11. I get a phone call from my attorney at about 9:30 that the state is going to charge me with 2 more charges, and one of them carries a life sentence. And I'm saying to myself, like, what could it really be? And mind you, keep in mind, at this point, my bail is $50,000. 10% of that is $5,000. I was making bail, without a doubt. I was going to be released that day. So I went to court. They charged me with sexual assault, and lewd and lascivious conduct. Because the sexual assault carries a life sentence, I was held without bail.
I don't know if you're, well, you must be, you said that you were in for a year before, but one of the things is, this is why we have the show, because, again, mass incarceration, they're using these kinds of things to put people in prison for life and life without parole, modern-day slavery. And what's going on with you right now most likely is being, the pressure is being put on you and also your friend from 18 years ago. I want to know what her feelings are to know that all these things are going on. Is she against it? Is she for it? Have you talked to her? Is she still with this sugar daddy? And if so, is it about the money or is it about actual love or caring for each other?
Okay, so maybe I'm not explaining it right. We don't speak at all. She set me up. She set me up. You know, she set me up because it was about to be revealed what she was doing. She deemed me as a threat. And so let me backtrack. One night, I'm not going to say which bar or what state it was, but I was in a bar hanging out with a group of guys. Some of them I knew, some of them I didn't know. So we're having casual conversation, and her name comes up. And the guy's like, I'm sleeping with her. I'm quiet because I'm trying to listen. And then he starts going on and on and on. And I'm like, are you sure you're sleeping with her? Like, oh, that's me and her, we sleeping together. That's my woman at the time. So he's like, yeah. He's like, you want to see? So he opens his phone and he shows me messages, pictures, videos, and sure enough, it's her. So immediately I get on the phone and I call her. I'm calling her. She's not answering the phone. So I leave the bar and I'm headed there. So apparently, I don't know if this guy called her and told her that I was on my way or whatnot, but she didn't answer the phone. So, and keep in mind, I'm intoxicated at this point. So she didn't answer the phone. So what I did, which wasn't very smart, I sent her a video clip with me driving and saying, open the door. When I get there, there's going to be problems. So I get there. She opens the door. We argue. I go into the living room. I sit down on the couch, and I cut the TV on. She comes in, and she's trying to calm me down, and I'm like, listen, that's not going to work because I've seen what you did. She's like, no, that's not recent. And I'm like, yes, it's recent. I see the dates. You know, this is very recent. So she gets up and goes into the bedroom. I get up and I go in the kitchen, open the fridge to get something to eat. She comes out of the bedroom and she says, you want something to eat? You want me to make you something to eat? I'm like, sure. So I go back in the living room, sit down, continue watching TV. She comes in with the food. I eat. We still arguing. And we eventually go in the bedroom. Now, we have sex. The next morning, she's waking me up at like 5:30, 6 in the morning. So I rolled over. I'm like, why are you waking me up so early in the morning? Is Alan coming? She's like, he's already here. I'm like, at this point, you know what? Alan needs to know that you're playing both sides. Alan needs to know what is really going on. So when I see Alan, I'm going to share with him that you're living a double life. So we argue about her waking me up and about me notifying Alan of her infidelity, whatever. So I leave. Mind you, This is August 19th, 2020. So I leave August 24th. Up until August 24th, I don't hear anything from her, which is usual. We go days without talking. So it's common because we're always arguing. So the 24th, which happens to be my birthday, I'm hanging out with some friends, and I don't hear from her. So I'm like, it's my birthday. Like, why wouldn't I hear from her? Like, we argue all the time. So I go by her residence. This is around 11 p.m. So I go by her house, and I knock on the window, and all of a sudden, there's cops everywhere. So me knowing, I ran because I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know. So I call her phone, and I'm like, "You what? Like, you set me up? Like, you?" She automatically hands the phone to one of the officers. So he's like, "Mr. Bedford, where are you? We have a warrant out for your arrest," and this, that, and third. So it didn't dawn on me when he was saying that they have a warrant out for my arrest. It didn't dawn on me because he's talking about a warrant from the 19th. So, and keep in mind, at this time, I didn't know anything about anything on the 19th. So I'm saying to myself, I'm not around. I'm saying to him, I'm not around. You know what I'm saying? That wasn't me at the scene. You guys didn't catch me at the scene, blah, blah, blah. So long story short, I give it about 4 or 5 hours to sober up a little bit. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go turn myself in. You know, the least that could happen is you say, well, you know, a no trespassing or, you know, criminal mischief or something petty. I'm going to bail out. It's not a problem. I'm going to bail out. So I go down there with like $500 in my pocket thinking I'm going to bail out. They lock me up and they're like, oh, no, you're not going anywhere. You're not getting any bail because you have charges from the 19th. Which are domestic assault, burglary, and stalking. And at this point, I'm shocked because I'm like, where did these charges come from? So I'm sitting in my cell, and I'm baffled, you know, because I'm still, mind you, at this point, I have no paperwork. I have no affidavit. I have nothing. So throughout the course of me dealing with the public defender that I had, I tried numerous times to get my paperwork, and it was to no avail. So finally, I was able to obtain legal counsel, and within that same week, I received my paperwork. So now I'm reading everything, and this woman claimed that when I left at 6:30 in the morning, she waited until noontime to call the police and say that I assaulted her. Now, keep in mind, she didn't say anything about a sexual assault. She didn't say anything about a rape. She called and mentioned a domestic assault. One officer showed up, took the report, and he took pictures of her supposedly injuries, which she inflicted on herself. I never touched this woman. You know, I never touched this woman. So she knew that she had already gotten caught 9 months prior by her sugar daddy. He came and took her Lexus. He cut her off. So she needed to do something again because he caught her again, and her whole shit, her whole demise was about to blow up in her face. So something needed to be done. Mind you, in her report, when she wrote up whatever she wrote up her statement, It didn't say anything about sexual assault. It didn't say anything about any rape. None of that. And the cop's affidavit, when he sat there and took the report, it said nothing about sexual assault. None of that was reported. This was purposely done with her and the victim's advocate to keep me incarcerated, because she was fearful if I came home on bail that I was going to harm her. So I sat in my cell for a year and a half, locked in 23 hours and 45 minutes a day, only being able to come out for 15 minutes at a time, at a day.
I know so many incarcerated individuals who are locked in for 22, 23 hours a day. I wanted to ask you, and we have a caller real quickly. I'm just going to see. 561, do you want to state your name, please?
Jacqueline McNeely.
Pardon?
It's Jacqueline McNeely.
Jacqueline. Okay.
That's my mother.
Oh, okay. Jacqueline, I'm going to ask you for your comment in a minute. I want to say one thing. Lauren, were you dating this girl for 18 years, or you've known one another for 18 years? How long were you together as a couple?
I've known her for 18 years. Never before had we had any interaction. So it was only for probably about 10 months.
Okay.
Yeah, probably about 10 months.
Okay, so you were actually dating for about 10 months?
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
So it was an intimacy, right? Okay. So when did this other man come into the picture?
So he's been in the picture before I came in the picture. So to put better clarity on it, he's an older guy. He's probably about 60 years old. He's very wealthy. He has a wife, kids, and, you know, property, and so on and so forth. So the agreement or the arrangement that, you know, I mean, we came upon was that, you know, I can't support you, and I'm not going to support you financially. So this is merely just a sexual thing. That's all it was. He's going to support you financially, you know what I mean? So I'm aware of that. And, you know, this is just a sexual thing between me and her. It wasn't serious, you know, it wasn't, you know, we wasn't seen out and about all the time. I would go there primarily at night, and this guy would come in the daytime.
So
all
three of you were aware of all of this game that you were playing, the three of you?
He wasn't. He wasn't aware.
But you and this girl were. Okay, so you and this
That's
girl
correct.
Were aware. So it's almost as though you knew what she was about before anything happened, before you got set up yourself. You knew because you were part of it. You were with her. So unfortunately, this is how things work. Unfortunately, she set you up. You knew what she was all about. Unfortunately, you may end up going to prison for a long time based on somebody that you already knew was a scammer. And I'd like to hear what your mother has to say. Jackie or Jacqueline?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, did you want to say something about this entire situation?
Initially, my son was not aware of her dealings and her things that she was doing. Not initially. He actually got sucked into it because he kind of liked this girl. And she had also told him that she was going to leave that situation. So based on what she told him, he was hoping that she would have been out of that relationship or whatever it is, because my son was working his way to financial independence. He had a lot of plans. He was getting ready to go to school. He was corresponding with me so that we could all move to a different state from Florida because he had lost his brother and his sister. So we were all making plans for a better financial future. So he was not initially aware of any of this with this girl. When he started falling for her, getting stronger about her, they had a discussion about her changing her life. So it was premature that this girl set him up because things weren't right with my son as yet. So she did all of this in malice. She was playing them both. She told him that she was going to get out of the situation.
Yes, indeed.
You know what? One of the things is, and I'd be wrong if I didn't say this, one of the things is that you may have cared a lot for the girl, and maybe you got caught up in her scam, or maybe the two of you came up with it together. I am definitely against the criminal justice system. It's because it's so corrupt, it's deceptive, it's full of lies. But the thing, to be realistic about the whole thing, when two people get involved and one deceives the other, it's one thing. But when two people get involved and both know what's going on and they're trying to deceive someone else, these are the kind of things that happen. Unfortunately, if your feelings were for this girl and she brought you into this, this is a sad situation because this happens a lot as well. Because of love, people get scammed by their own mate. I'm trying to understand, though, if you knew what she was doing all along and you were a part of it, and now the only reason you're upset with her is because she falsely accused you of doing something, because apparently she's trying to get you out of the picture completely now so that she can
he
go
didn't
on.
He didn't know. Uh-huh. I'm sorry to interrupt. You let me know.
The thing is,
he just
said that he knew that she was doing it because of the money with the other person. Unfortunately, that's where things started to fall apart. Because this girl doesn't seem to be anybody that I would want my loved one to go out with, but I'm sorry to say there are girls out there like that. And it has happened not only to my loved one, but to others where they've gotten involved with women who are just deceptive. Sometimes it's the men out there that they talk about. And apparently this is what this girl was doing. She was playing two people.
Yes.
And
yes, she
both
had a
of them
timeline. She told
her.
She, okay, go ahead.
If I listen to everyone who ended up with a woman like that, or even these women that ended up with men like that, there would be a no-ending radio show 24/7 because this happens all the time. But in this situation, your son has a problem with the girl he's with or was with, plus we have a system, a court system, a prosecution system where they lie, they deceive, they want to win their cases, so they will make that girl look like a librarian. When he goes to trial, they will make that girl look like she is so innocent, because this is how it works. And guaranteed, they will make her look like she is really innocent, even though she's a big contributor to all of this. We, right now in this country, we have a major problem. We have mass incarcerations, and I don't know if you've been listening on Wednesdays, but I had Marion Jacobs come on from the Netherlands talking about the differences between the prisons in Europe, in France, girls from Germany, the same thing. The differences between the prisons in other countries compared to the prisons here. The differences between the court system. The mass incarceration in the United States, whereas in every other country, the maximum sentence for any crime is 25 years. We have a country right now that we live in that's corrupt, deceptive, racist, hateful, vengeful, retaliative. This is the country we're living in. You don't want to get involved with women who have a scam going on and then become a part of it, because this is where you end up. But I want you to go on and finish talking about what you were saying.
Yes, thank you. My son, fortunately, has a heart of gold to everyone. And he puts himself last. Well, he used to. Now he has to put himself first. He met this girl, and they were talking. He had no idea of her background. She needed some help with some other things, and he helped her. And so they got to liking each other, and he fell hard for her. At that point in which he forgot even about his mother and his own children because he was so deep into this girl trying to help her. Also mentally, because her head was not in a good space at the time. He didn't know why. He didn't know that she was with this guy who, you know, was uptail, up there, and controlling to this woman. He had no idea about this other situation. She hid this, obviously, very well from him while she was plotting. So, again, I say that when I spoke to my son and we made plans for him to, because I had assisted him in going to CDL school here, and him and his grandma spoke, and he said, well, he's going to go back upstate. He's going to make a way. He's going to start working and attending another school so that he could help himself and his family. And so when he told me about this girl, he actually told me that he was falling in love with her. He was going to make a life with her. And so later on when he got arrested and I heard of the charges, I was very surprised. So he initially didn't know that this girl was into anything at all. When he found out through another friend and asked her about it, she said she was going to get out of it. And she gave him a timeline, which was 6 months. And apparently she did not. So he was not able to finish saying all of this to you, probably because he needed me to say something because I'm here at church. I'm actually a deaconess at my church, and I stepped out so I can be on the podcast. But if you allow him, he will elaborate on that to say that she said that she was not strongly involved with this man, that he was, the man is a married man, and he has children. And my son stated to her, I am not going to continue this relationship, whatever it is, even though sexual, it was getting further than being sexual. They were making plans to be together. My son told me this. He told me they were making plans to get together. So when I heard of the arrest, I was very shocked. Him himself just stated he was shocked. So she
let me
went
ask,
and backpedaled.
Lauren, let me ask you, would she call you, or were you doing all the calling? Were you calling her and connecting with her? Or was she also reciprocating and calling you as well?
No, everything was mutual.
Okay,
everything was mutual.
So if that's the case, then stalking seems ridiculous, that you should be charged with stalking.
Correct.
If she was calling you. So let's just put that aside, because stalking involves people that don't want to be bothered, and the other person continuously tries to stalk them. So that's ridiculous. So what else was going on?
So the stalking charges came from, you know, her basically saying that, and keep in mind, Vermont is a state where there is no grand jury. And a lot of people don't understand what that means. And what that means is if you are charged with 22 crimes, you have to fight 22 crimes, and they might add 7 more crimes on top of the 22. When you have a grand jury, it goes to a panel, and if you're charged with 22 crimes, they will sit down and look at the facts and look at the evidence and say, no, we're not going to charge him with this. It doesn't equate to the evidence. And instead of them charging you with 22 crimes, you're charged with 5 crimes. But here in Vermont, whatever you're charged with, you have to fight all of it. So
How many were you charged with?
I am charged with 6 counts right now. 3 domestics. 6 counts right now. 3 domestics, sexual assault, L&L, and the stalking. Now,
okay.
The sexual assault carries a life sentence, and the domestics carry a 15-year sentence.
What proof What proof, or has it come, your trial hasn't come up yet, but what proof does she have, or do they have, the prosecutors, that on the sexual assaults?
None.
If you were in a relationship with
Zero.
A girl. Okay, so they don't have proof that she was sexually assaulted. And the stalking, you say the two of you were communicating mutually, so they could pull up phone records, right, to prove that she had been calling you as well?
That's correct.
Now, this person, the sugar daddy, is he somebody of prestige? Is this a prominent person, or well, influential person, or what is he about?
He owns a dealership out of state, and he owns a lot of properties, houses, and but he's kind of in the shadows. And according to my attorney, he's probably part of the reason why she did this. Like, it was elaborated. He showed up. So that morning when I left at 6:30, this woman said that she waited until noon to report the incident because she had to meet with Alan, her sugar daddy, and he knows nothing about me. Now, that's a lie, obviously, because he hired a private investigator to follow me and you around and take pictures. So you're lying. He knew about it. Now, he came all the way up from out of state, and according to you, he was only there for 10 minutes. Now, that's odd. That's fishy. First of all, why would you wait until 6 hours after the alleged incident to report it? Second of all, if he's coming all the way from out of state, he's not going to be there for 10 minutes only. So it's a lot of, fishy things going on. But this is one thing that I know, and it's to be noted. When you're telling the truth remains the same throughout the
exactly.
entire course.
You have that right.
Okay, guys, can I interrupt you for 1 second? I got to say something. There was a time that, first I should say this. Lauren was very vulnerable at the time when this girl was doing this, all the stuff she was doing to him. He had just lost his brother tragically, and he also lost his sister tragically. Any kind of promise of hope from anyone would be hope for Lauren to continue on with his life. This girl was big on influencing him. She told him she loved him. They were moving towards being together. So he held on to that promise. That's why he went back to check on her on the night of his birthday, because at that time he was also remembering the loss of his sister and his brother. His mother is away in another state. I could not support him in any way, shape, or form. I'm going through the same thing with the loss of two children and a sister. Also, Lauren was supporting and still is assisting and supporting his niece and nephew. There's three girls and one boy. So in short, I must say to you that this girl, Lauren, looked up to her as a sort of role model and a person that was going to assist him in getting out of his depression that he was going through with the loss of his siblings. And I must say, as well as me grieving here, he looked at her as a type of person who would be a great daughter-in-law for me. Lauren and her, while they were sitting in his car one night, were talking. I spoke to this girl before. They were talking, and the conversation went as, I'm glad to meet you. I hope to see you soon when we get to move up and come up. So this was a situation where Lauren was going into a relationship with this girl. So it's not just sexual, as he had, I know he stopped talking at the moment because also that I have to get back in church. I'm actually outside church on this podcast. So in leaving you, I want to go back in because they're missing me right now. I had to ask them to give me another 10 minutes. This is a situation where, with his kind heart and his vulnerability, being that he was at a low point in his life, he believed this girl. He loved her. They were supposed to be having a life together. I'm going to leave now. I'll try to call back in or watch my text if you need you to come back out of church to say something else. But I thank you for hearing his voice, and thank you for listening to me. And I'm praying that these prosecutors will get a hold of me so I can be a witness to this. Nobody so far has called me to be any witness to this.
I know the chance that they had.
Nobody has contacted me.
This is where cultures come in. Cultures come in because it depends on the state. It depends on the relationships. It depends on a lot of things. And as far as mothers being able to speak, this is sad because a lot of times the mother sees a lot during a relationship going on. They see a lot of interaction. They see a lot of inappropriateness, or they see a lot of appropriateness. You mentioned your son is vulnerable. We have mass incarceration in the U.S. You know there's going to be a lot of vulnerable men and women in those prisons, and there's going to be a lot of users. I don't know where this girl was from. I don't know if she was raised in Vermont, but I do know Vermont and Maine and New Hampshire and even Massachusetts. These are states that have a lot of racism in it. So a lot of times these are the things that are the contributor to people getting life sentences, life without, and even death row in states where this death row still in existence. But I wanted to ask, how did your siblings die, Lauren?
I can tell her. Car accident and murder.
Oh, jeez. How long ago?
And shortly after, he lost an aunt as well, within a month after his sister. 2018-19, from my recollection. It's like yesterday.
Everything seems to be coming together. All of this happened around the same time. The relationship between you and the girl, the death of your siblings, and all of this seemed to happen at a time when you probably were looking for some support and ended up getting it in the wrong way. You know, that's why I say we have mass incarceration in this country. We have a lot of victims who became offenders behind those prison walls. There's a lot of work being done with legislative members around the country to abolish life without parole sentencing, and also to abolish life sentencing, to abolish solitary confinement, to abolish restrictive housing units. It hasn't happened quick enough, but there's people working on it now to stop it. But we have people who were sucked into the system by lies and deception, corruption, and unfortunately, this can happen. Women always seem to have the attention, to have the support from a lot of prosecutors and people in government, but it also happens to men too. And unfortunately, it has happened with you, Lauren, and this is the only thing I can say is they will have to show proof of what the girl is saying. If it's true, they would have to show proof that you were stalking. And if she was communicating with you, that's mutual. They would have to show proof that you had done something other than that. I don't know how much proof, but you did mention something about the, hold on a second. We have another caller. You want 810, you want to state your name, please? Okay. You did mention
something. This is Paul Randolph.
Pardon? Hello?
This is Paula Ransdale. My name. I'm a caller listening in.
Okay. Did you want to say something?
No, I was just listening.
Okay. What I was going to say is you said, Lauren, that there was a polygraph test taken and that you passed it. This is another unfortunate thing. this is another unfortunate thing, is that polygraphs don't use them in courts, which I believe they should, because as you mentioned, when someone lies, they forget what they say and they repeat, they every time it changes. This has happened so many times in the courts. When somebody's telling the truth, it's always going to be the same, but when they're lying, their stories are going to change a dozen times or more. So I believe polygraphs should be used in the courts, but unfortunately they haven't put that into effect yet.
Right, and not to cut you off, a lot of people don't understand, admissibility and inadmissibility, why they can and they can't be used. They can't be used, from my research, from my understanding and knowledge, they can't be used because of the failure ratio. Because you can come up with a dozen things why you failed. You was nauseous. You didn't get much sleep. Your medication. You can name a lot of things why you failed. But when you pass, there's not much that you could say you're a CIA op. You know what I mean? So that's why you can't use it in court. But it is used for almost every federal job. If you go and apply for a government job, a federal job, polygraphs are used. So in the court system, I think we all know where I would like to go with this, but
exactly. I know.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're saying. I agree with you. I agree with you. Can you talk? Hold on a second. The phone's been ringing. Can you talk more about the situation? Hold on a second. We have another caller. 802. Please state your name.
Amanda Morin.
Okay. Amanda, would you like to say something as well?
I just have a quick question. I was also wondering if there was ever a plea deal that was offered. Just wondering if you could touch on it before the show ends.
The problem with plea deals is a lot of times when someone is innocent, they have an unfortunate opportunity to make a decision. If they plea bargain, then they're admitting guilt that they may not be responsible for. They may be innocent, but to get a lesser sentence, they do a plea deal. A lot of people are serving life in prison and life without in prison because they agree to plea deals, even though they're innocent. And this is another problem, just like the polygraph test. This is another problem. If the courts don't take the polygraph, I don't know why they would give them in the first place. But as Lauren was saying, they use them in federal cases. They use these polygraphs in federal cases. They should use them in the courts as well. But as far as what you were just mentioning, the plea deals is something that is very controversial issue right now with a lot of people, because a lot of them are taking plea deals.
Yeah, not to cut you off, there was a plea offer, probably about 8 months after I was incarcerated, they offered me a 5 to 20. And I it's not a funny situation, but I laughed at it because first of all, I'm innocent. Second of all, there's proof that I'm innocent. This polygraph, I had a private investigator come up to the jail, and I paid $650 to sit down for 3 hours and answer all types of questions pertaining to things that happened that night, and just questions in general with, stuff hooked up to your chest, your fingers, your arms. And so it was a stressful environment. It was a stressful situation, and I still passed because I'm not guilty, and I could have not took the polygraph. And I must state this: throughout my entire incarceration, that period, I don't know anyone that was accused of a crime like this, or any crime rather, and took a polygraph volunteered actually to take a polygraph, paid for it, and passed. So,
they had you pay for the polygraph as well? You have to pay for it?
I paid for it because the state didn't offer the polygraph. My private counsel is the one who suggested, hey, why don't we do a polygraph? So I was like, sure, why not? So I think, you know, with that being passed, it kind of gave my attorney more momentum to be more aggressive with the case.
Okay. Okay. So your trial's coming up in 2 weeks, you say?
It's next month. The 22nd through the 26th.
Okay. Now, your mom, are you still on with us, Jacqueline, Jackie?
No, she's probably not.
Yeah,
she's back in church. Okay.
Okay, we have 810. Do you want, okay, that's Amanda. The other one just dropped. Okay, okay, so have you been instructed not to talk to this girl, or have you just not talked?
No, I've been instructed to stay away from her, and I have no means of contacting her whatsoever.
Good.
Let me say something to that as well. It is really through some counseling that I had to say to him, you know, forget about her, because he was so strong in love for her because of his vulnerability, and Mama is not close to him for him to talk to. And my mom, who he usually speaks with, has been very sick. And so it's taken a lot of nights and on the phone with Lauren to tell him, this happened already. Just try to see if you can move on from her. He has gotten to the point now where he wants nothing to do with her, obviously, with all of this, but it is taking him some time and some therapy to get over her, because they were moving towards being together.
You know, it's too bad. It's too bad relationships happen like this, but I'm sorry to say. One of the things is we know that there is a pandemic in this country of mental illnesses and addictions. And a person can be normal. There's a lot of noise going on in the background, so I'm going to put some people on mute. Okay. There's an epidemic in this country of mental health issues and also addictions. And a person can be pretty normal, but they could be carrying some back trauma from the past with them. And it just takes some small situation to turn into something big. And as you mentioned, you fell for this girl. You had just lost your brother. You had just lost your sister in a bad accident. And you mentioned a murder. And you were looking for some support. Unfortunately, these things turn into worse when you get hooked up with somebody that's not worth your time. And this is what happens in a lot of cases. This is why we have mass incarceration in the country. But I started a petition a year and a half ago, and that is to abolish prisons and replace it with long-term residential treatment facilities for mental health issues and also for addictions. Because right now what you're talking about is you had a psychological issue when you lost your sister and you lost your brother. And you were reaching out for some support, and you ended up with this woman who was using you and also using this sugar daddy, as you mentioned. And this is how you got caught up in it. But people need to sign petitions that replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities, because all they're learning from in the prisons, all they're receiving is life without, life sentences, death row. These are all modern-day slavery. These are all areas where we have legislative leaders who are all about throwing people in prison and throwing the key away. You may not ever see this girl. You may not even want to see her. I guarantee you shouldn't. But these are situations that happen. The damage is done. Now it's up to your lawyer and up to others to try to resolve these unresolved issues. And this is where it's going to be very difficult. With the polygraph test, if the courts accept it, it would help. I don't know if they will. But I do know that you want to start right now. You want to start connecting with prisoner advocacy groups outside Vermont and anywhere else you can find them. You want to connect with, if it's not the Innocence Project because you have a lawyer, connect with the Innocence Project just to let them know, to get them familiar with you from the beginning. The Cardoza Project. The Cardoza Project is another one like the Innocence Project. You want to connect with a lot of these groups. This girl, like many others throughout the country, as well as men that do it sometimes too, this girl has used her scamming, deceitful ways to also influence you. And you falling into it became a part of the scam. And that's what's going to hurt. But hopefully your lawyer will be able to bring some of these things out in court and you'll be able to, you know, get out. And I hope you do. But is there anything you want the audience to know or anything you want the audience to do to maybe perhaps help you? I don't know. At this point, it's still premature because your trial is not over and you haven't gotten sentenced yet. But taking a plea deal is a dangerous situation. If you truly are innocent.
Cut you off. I'm not taking a plea deal, for the simple fact that I'm innocent. You know, and a lot of people don't understand. You know, the system, the way it works in Vermont is she has to come to court and she has to get on the stand and relive what she quote unquote went through. So it's not, you know, yes, it's, you know, you say something and I'm charged. They don't need necessarily physical evidence. If she says this occurred, they charge you and then you have to prove that it didn't occur. So in my situation, the only evidence that they have is the bruises and the pictures that the officer took, which anyone, and when it comes out, it'll come out. But there's probably a few listeners now that I've shown the polygraph results to. And when you see these pictures, you're looking at nothing. You can't even see the bruises. You can't even, you know, so if they're going to convict me off of that, then it's more to it. It's me being a black man in a white state. And that's what I'm more fearful of. I'm not so much concerned about, you know, what they have as far as evidence, because I know, for one, I didn't commit this crime. You know, I'm just wrapped up in the system. You know, so unfortunately, that is what's going on. But if the listeners don't understand, you know, she can't hide behind the door. She can't make these allegations and hide behind the door. She has to get on a stand and face me. I have a right to face my accuser. So she has to go on the stand and be cross-examined by my attorney. So that is what's going to happen next month, because I'm not taking a plea deal. It's not happening. I'm innocent. And a lot of these groups, what I'm finding out is that they don't want to help. They don't want to get involved until there's been a conviction, which baffles me. You're basically saying you're going to wait until I'm convicted so you can help. It's
exactly.
Kind of like an appeal process.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I say this all the time on the shows. NAACP, the National Action Network, Al Sharpton's National Action, since he became a thing on CNN News and has his own show, it's kind of like they don't do anything. The problem is, a lot of times, they could prevent it, but they're not out there trying to help until something happens. If it's a suicide in the prisons, if it's a suicide in the communities, if it's a shooting, a murders, a shot in the back, if it involves a person of color, all of a sudden they come out. And I'm glad you said this, because right now, you being in the state of Vermont is the time that they need to help. They need to step in. Maybe you want to write to them. Maybe you want to have your mother write to them. You might want to try to connect somehow with them and at least try to see if they will participate. But as somebody that's been advocating for over 25 years now, I can tell you right now, NAACP, National Action Network, ACLU, none of them are going to do anything to help. None of them. That's an unfortunate thing, but that's the truth.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because I've looked into and made phone calls myself, and you know, you said it right. You know, none of them wants to do anything, and a lot of them, you know, it's they want a conviction first, and you know, even after that, you know, the appeal process. See, a lot of people feel like, you know, well, if you get convicted, you can appeal it. Well, an appeal may take 5 years. You know, it may take 10 years. Who knows? And then you have to have money to appeal.
Exactly.
You know, not to appeal. Not to appeal. You don't have to have money to appeal. You have a constitutional right to appeal. But to get the proper results, you have to have money. Just like fighting a case, you have to have private counsel in order, because we all know they work together.
They've had appeals going on, whereas they move the prisoners to another state, and they do the appeals without the prisoner being present. This has happened as well, that the incarcerated individual can't even be at their own appeal. They appoint a court-appointed lawyer, but these things happen. But again, I want to say, Lauren, right now it's sad that your trial hasn't come up yet, because nothing is going to really be able to be done until after you go to court. But just as they say you have to prove your innocence, they also should be saying that she has to prove her statements, her allegations. And if you've taken a polygraph test, maybe that's what they need to do with her as well, is have her take a polygraph test and see.
Yeah, they would never do that. Because that is what I originally thought. I thought, okay, well, the chances of, you know, both people passing is slim to none. And I said to my attorney, well, since I passed, let's ask them, show them the results and ask them to have her take one as well. Well, she's like, that will never happen, because that will only shows that she's lying. Well, they know she's lying. They know she's lying, but they want a conviction. They want me so bad that they're willing to put this woman on the stand and curtail whatever they need to do, coach her into saying and being. For me, the 22nd through the 26th will be judgment day, because I'm not taking a plea deal, because I didn't do any of this. So, you know, it's nerve-wracking. Nobody wants to go to trial, but it's unfortunate. I'm not taking a plea deal at this point. So
I will one thing I will want you to keep us updated, regardless of what happens, what the outcome is of your trial, to somehow keep us updated. And I will say, prisoners do call in directly from the prisons. This past Tuesday, I had. And the Tuesday before, I had quite a few prisoners calling in from California. Actually, the Black Lives Matter prison chapter out of California, and they are incarcerated. So they were calling in, and Tuesdays become a voice. And there's a lot of incarcerated that can't call in on their own, but they can call in through someone else, and they can speak out and talk about their issue, their incarceration. So if for any reason you're unable to, after your trial, to connect with us, have your mother or someone else contact us, and we will try to figure out a way to get your story back out here again. I want to say once again, if there's anything you want the audience to know of ways they can help, making phone calls to legislative members or whatever, even writing to them to do so, feel free to let the audience know.
I guess, you know, what you can do is, need be, show up at the courtroom. If you support me and believe my story, I will be handing out the results, the polygraph results, at the courthouse between the 22nd and the 26th. You know, all I'm asking is for support. And keep in mind, these allegations, the sexual, there is no evidence whatsoever of a sexual assault. There is none. This was merely said. It was made up. When I said there was no evidence, she went around telling everyone that she took a SANE exam, which is a rape kit. She never took one. There is no blood. There is no semen. There is no bed sheets. There is no clothes. There is nothing. When the officer went to her apartment, everything was intact. There was no signs of a struggle. There was, she lives in an apartment building. At the time, her daughter was 4 years old. So her daughter's bedroom was right next to hers. There was a neighbor that shares the wall downstairs. There is two neighbors upstairs. She claims that she was screaming at the top of her lungs the whole night. For 5 hours, while I assaulted you, you were screaming at the top of your lungs, and your daughter didn't wake up and come in the bedroom. The neighbor downstairs did not hear you, did not hear anything. Both neighbors upstairs did not hear anything. So how is it that you was assaulted and no one heard you? So we went, my legal counsel went a bit further and said, okay, well, we're going to do a sound test on the building. Now, mind you, she's saying that these allegations occurred between 1:30 and 6:30 in the morning, where everything is quiet. So a pin drop, you could hear. So daytime, around 10 in the morning, my private investigator and my attorney and a colleague came down and performed a sound test in the building, where her colleague was inside of the building with my private investigator and my attorney was outside of the building. Her colleague was screaming inside of the building, and my attorney told me that you could hear it pretty much throughout the whole neighborhood. So one of the things that we're going to ask the judge is to have the jury go to the alleged crime scene. We want the jury to go to the building and see for themselves this building, the walls, the closeness of the neighbors downstairs and upstairs. They can have a visual. So it's not just a slam dunk case to where, yeah, the prosecutors are going to say, "What?" No. This is why I'm fighting tooth and nail, because you're not going to make these allegations against me that doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense. What you're saying just doesn't.
It sounds like you have a good case with what you just said. This no evidence, no anything, and no sound. So again, you would like the anyone that would like to support you on the day of your trial to be there, and you gave the date, and just give maybe the information as far as the court, the area that the case will be tried in.
Yes, so it'll be in Brattleboro, Vermont. It will be from the 22nd to the 26th. So the 22nd is jury draw. So no one really needs to show up for that. But 23rd, and I believe the 22nd is a Monday. So Monday, it's a 4-day trial. So Monday through Friday. But no one has to show up for the 22nd. But if you can support me in any way, shape, or form, show up. You know, I don't know if it would cause a commotion if I was to get some shirts printed and, you know, I have supporters wear the shirts in the courtroom. I don't know. These are things that I have to go over with my attorney. But just support me. If you believe.
Just to have people in the courtroom with you. And also, prior to going to court, what you might want to do is get some letters of support from your neighbors or your friends or family members or whatever, so that you can actually have your lawyer present some of that in court too, your character, your background. I know that you mentioned that you were in for a year under that false conviction prior to, that was a year ago. Had you ever been incarcerated prior to that?
Yes. As an adolescent, I made some poor choices, and unfortunately, those choices were here in Vermont. So they're using those
against
to
you.
Paint a picture, correct?
Yeah, that's what I was
correct.
Thinking. But I really want to thank you for coming on, Lauren, and telling your story. And again, if your mother wants to say anything,
yes.
I'm just taking her off. I'm taking you off of mute because I think the background noise was coming from your area. But I wanted to say, do you have any last minute things you want to say pertaining to this?
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Can you hear?
Am I on?
Yes, you are. Can you hear okay?
Oh, okay. Yes. I certainly would like for the public to know that this girl was known to me by phone through my son, and that, as my son stated, he knew her for about 18 years. So he knew of some great traits in this girl, and that's why he proceeded to begin a relationship with her. In his vulnerability from the things he went through, not only did he lose his two siblings, he also lost a very dear aunt to him a month after his sister died tragically in a car accident. So there had been consecutively three deaths.
And a moment. Don't forget, my father passed away while I was incarcerated. Don't forget that.
Oh, yes. We're forgetting so many traumas. His father had passed away as well. So there were so many things that he was, reasons why he was leaning towards this huge promise of some stability, of someone to lean on. And again, I say that this girl and I spoke. She strongly seemed to have been the person that I would have called a daughter-in-law. Matter of fact, she went ahead and said to me, "Don't worry, Ma, I got your son." So she has not reached out to me since she's done this. And again, every time I spoke to her was while in the presence of Lauren. Lauren was with her, so I spoke to her then. I'm very disappointed that she would do something like that, and I'm also very disappointed, although I understand the court system there, that they would not call me as a witness. I wish they would. For us to prove that, irrespective of what she's doing to Lauren, he's going to be proven innocent because he's not guilty. And I want to thank you for hearing our voices today, and I want to thank you for being a listener and to put this out there for all people that are being accused innocently of things. And I'm praying that this will open up some eyes to let them, the court system and others, know that this is not an okay thing to do, to defamate people's character and first begin that by saying I love you and moving steps towards doing that, so it seems, and this was not true. So everything about this girl was false from the beginning.
You know,
thank you very much.
The thing is, and I want to say, you say you're a deaconess. I want you to, when you get a chance, to go into Proverbs chapter 7, verses 5. But one of the things is, we have to know, a lot of times what seems to be is not always what it should be or what it actually is. Now, if you remember correctly, I'm going to bring this up again about the woman, the young lady who talked her boyfriend into committing suicide. Her name was Megan Carter. I believe it was Megan Carter. And she talked her boyfriend into committing suicide. Now, they were supposed to be boyfriend and girlfriend, truly in love with one another, and this is what happened. She went to prison, and she got out after a year for good time. Now, if that turned around and it was a homicide instead of a suicide, that person that killed himself would have been in prison today, and he would have been serving a lot more than a year. So sometimes when these individuals end up in relationships, whether it be, as I said, I'm not just saying that women are the cause. There are men out there too. But I want members of society to realize that it does happen to men as well. And a lot of times women can also make the mothers, the parents, the relatives, the siblings, everyone else think that it's true love. But we don't know what goes on behind closed doors. We don't know what's going on behind our backs. they can be treating our loved ones one way and doing something another way when they're not being watched or monitored. I just want to get that out there. But you look in Proverbs chapter 7, it talks about these women that just look for someone for prey. And these are some of the things that are happening. And you also want to look in the book of 2 Timothy chapter 3. You want to look at some of these scriptures because right now a lot of these things are happening now. And unfortunately, this is a bad time to be getting caught up in situations like that, especially when there's not much evidence. But from what Lauren is saying, there seems to be a lot of evidence missing that should help his case. And I hope and pray that everything goes well. Lauren, I want you to let us know. Keep us updated through your mother or through your advocate, Amanda, which has been she's been advocating as well. And I know, again, there are so many people behind those prison walls that have been wrongfully convicted, that have been given unrealistic, harsh sentences for the crimes that they have committed and the crimes many of them haven't committed. And these are some issues we need to keep up with our legislative members. We need to keep up writing those politicians, calling them, letting them know it's time for change. It's time for change. We can't just throw people in prison, throw away the key, and leave them in for the rest of their lives. We have to come up with solutions. And these solutions are not going to come up when there's so many lies and deception going on with the court system and the prosecutors. We need to challenge them as well.
Definitely. Well, I just want to say thanks for the opportunity.
Again, I wish you luck, and again, keep us informed as to how it goes. And you apparently have an excellent lawyer from what you're telling us. He seems to be covering all areas, and that's good.
It's a woman, and I purposely wanted to hire a woman. For a case like this. So she's outstanding. And, you know, if anyone wants to look her up, her name is Jessica Burke. She's out of Burlington, Burke Law Firm. She's very good at what she does.
Hopefully she'll be able to come on the radio show with you sometime after this is over if you get exonerated before you go in.
Absolutely.
She's always welcome to come on.
Okay. Well, Leona, I definitely appreciate you giving me the opportunity.
And again, Lauren, as I was saying, try to get some letters of support before your court date and as many as you can. And again, 802, you want to state your name, please? 802?
Oh, yes, ma'am. My name is Carrie.
Hello, Carrie. Do you have something you want to say to add to all of this?
I do believe... I can hear it in his voice, but I do believe he is innocent, and I feel like it's very unfair of our judicial system that a man can get, you know, possibly have to face time just off of what an angry female could say about him. And I just feel like he is being wrongly accused. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm glad you're calling in. I'm glad you're stating that because, again, we have situations like this happening all the time in the prisons. And a lot of people say, what about the victims? Well, I have to remind them a lot of times these incarcerated individuals and these people that are being wrongfully accused are victims as well. There have been many that have been put to death on death row only to find out months and months later, sometimes years later, that they were innocent to begin with. We have a society which is so different from other countries, because we already have a society in this country who is already judged before knowing all the facts. We have a media that is already judged before knowing all the facts, and they contribute to a lot of these incarcerations, even though they don't know it. They contribute to a lot of these incarcerations that are unnecessary. So thank you so much for calling in and putting in those few words, because it means a lot, I'm sure, to you, Lauren, and to others.
No, yes, ma'am. I have seen, you know, men, you know, Eric DeBerry from New York City just came home 20 years. After 20 years of serving time for a crime he didn't commit, and that was just based off a detective having a vendetta against him. And now he had to do 20 years, and I'm just saying, yeah, it's just not fair sometimes. And
you know,
but yes, thank you so much. I am going to sit here and listen as well, ma'am.
When you mentioned New York, I don't know if you're familiar with attorney Jeffrey Deskovic.
No.
Deskovic was 16 years old. The police went to his house. They took him to the police station. His mother wasn't even home. His relatives weren't even home. They took him to the police station at 16 years of age. They somehow ended up charging him with a crime he didn't commit. It was a serious crime. And he went to prison at the age of 17 years of age. He was in for 17 years, I believe it was, before they found him innocent through the Innocence Project. He came out, he got his degree in his master's in criminal justice, and he's now an attorney. He's been an attorney for some time. But he knows what wrongful convictions are all about, and he knows about the setups. He knows about these people that set people up. And this is what happened in this country.
And also, you know, it's pretty much, it doesn't take anything to become, I mean, I'm not going to say that, but there's not much you have to do to become a police officer, detective. You know, and it's just, they have that type of authority and power, you know, and morally and their character might not even be right, you know, because they might have, you know, character flaws and just everything. You know, they might be having a bad day that day when they decide to pull over somebody. And, you know, they might mishandle it. You know, they might not pay attention. They might do some wrongful things, but it's like they have control. But they're regular human beings, too. I don't know.
That's what people forget.
Yeah, it's just not fair sometimes, ma'am.
That's what people – I have a nephew that's a police officer on Cape Cod. And you know what? I have a loved one that's incarcerated. But you know what? Sometimes police officers, they stick together, of course. They call it the brotherhood. But let one of them mess up and see how quick the brotherhood ends with them, just like with any other field of service. But one of the things is I believe a lot of these people that want to become police officers, it's like when they're kids, they'll ask what you want to be, and they'll say, I want to be a fireman or I want to be a policeman, because they see these people in uniform and they admire them. What they don't realize is these people, as you mentioned, are human beings, just like we are, and they can do wrong just like anybody else. A lot of them, I believe, are people that have been bullied in school or that never had that much attention, and they become police officers because they know now with the uniform, with the title, everybody's going to look up to them instead of looking down to them. And we have a lot of punks on the police force. And unfortunately, the good ones, the good police officers do not expose the bad ones, just like in the prison system. The bad, the corrupt guards and prison officials, they don't get exposed because their peers who are good are too cowardly to come forward. And I'm going to bring this up again. His name is Donald J. Vodica. He was a 14-year veteran correctional officer in one of the largest prisons in California. He exposed his peers. He wrote the book, The Green Wall. He exposed his peers for all the corruption, lies, the deception that were going on in that prison. That was a correctional officer that was not a coward, came forth. We have a lieutenant. His name is Michael Johnson from the Montana Department of Corrections who came on the show. He also disclosed or exposed the lack of appropriate treatment in Montana prison. We have Marion Jacob, psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands. We had Franz Kurz from Germany talking about the comparison between the prisons in their countries compared to the prisons in this country. Talking about the people, the prisoners being called by numbers, not even humane, while people in other countries are addressed by their names as human beings. So we have a problem in this country. And unless our citizens look at both sides, try to help with the resolving the problems instead of being part of the problems, that's what we need. We need people with the heart. We need people with the mind, with wisdom. And we need people to get more familiar with what's going on. And that's what this show is all about, exposure and bringing awareness so that people in society know there's good and bad behind those prison walls as well as in the community. Lambs amongst the wolves.
I don't want to hold you up, ma'am, and you're definitely right. Like, even where I live, 20 minutes north, there's a sheriff right now, this actual sheriff of this town, and he... Peter Newton, and he's under fire right now because he has a sexual assault, but he's still running for sheriff. And it just comes to show, look at this sheriff, you know, and he has charges pressed against him for, you know, being all types of, you know, I don't know, I guess his girlfriend didn't really like him, but look at, you know, he's still running for, or he's still in his position as a sheriff right now, pending charges. And it has to do with money, status, connections. It has to do with a lot, color. It has to do with a lot, depending. It's not like it's fair. It's not like this person is going to commit this crime over here and this person, and they're going to be treated fairly. It's not. There's no fairness.
Well, you heard recently about the former correctional officer that raped and killed an 11-year-old kid. This was 20 years ago, 30 years ago. They finally caught him, brought him to justice. He's in court now. But this was a correctional officer that killed an 11-year-old and then put her on the railroad track.
Wow.
That was a correctional officer. Now let's look at the WellPath. WellPath is a contracted agency with the Department of Corrections in some states, is a contracted agency, medical and psychological contracted agency. And recently, March 11th of this year, WellPath founder and CEO pleads guilty to federal bribery charges. This is a founder of a contracted agency with the Department of Corrections. We have a lot of this stuff going on, as you say, people in uniform. And also I understand from prisoners from different states that when somebody is found guilty of something, a correctional officer, official, whatever, when they're found guilty and they're fired, they're not fired, unbeknownst to people that should be known, these people are transferred to other prisons and they're given office duty or they're given other jobs, but they're not actually fired. There's a lot of this going on. But I want to say, everyone, Tuesdays, as always, we're open to people calling in to voice your opinion every Tuesday at 12 o'clock Eastern Time. I welcome everyone to call in. We have about 2 minutes left. If anyone on this line right now wants to say something, please do. Again, Tuesdays, Sunday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 12:30 California Time, Lawrence Drink, who was also incarcerated for 22 years, came out, started the Legacy Program, Each One Teach One. He does the show at 3:30 Eastern Time, 12:30 California Time on Sunday afternoons. Please join him, hear him call in, talk or whatever. He is doing the same thing. Mondays at 12 o'clock, Reginald Clemens, wrongfully convicted from Missouri. He and his friend Anaya run the 12 o'clock Eastern Time radio show, and they will be talking about a lot of these injustices. Again, anything left you want to say, audience, those that have called in, please do. I'm sorry, did you want to say something more? Pardon?
This is his mother.
Okay, we're running out of time. Do you have something you want to say?
I just want to thank you very much for all you do.
Well, thank you. And again, keep us updated on posted on what's going on and what happens at the trial. And hopefully he will be able to be the case will be dismissed. Audience, I want to thank you. Pardon?
No, and let's all pray for him as well.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, certainly. I just asked my church to do the same thing.
Right.
Exactly.
He's a good man.
Claim victory over his enemy. Audience,
I definitely appreciate it.
Thank you, Lauren. You keep us posted, and if it has to be through your mom or someone else, please do. But again, when this is over, we'll have you back on so you can talk more about the situation, okay?
And thank you. And I also want to thank Amanda for getting in contact with you on my behalf, you know, because I need this. You know, I've been holding this for a while, and a lot of people don't know. And, you know, it's they don't know what I'm living with, what I'm going through. And this will forever, regardless of the results, it will forever haunt me, you know, but I'm not going to let it deter me from, you know, living life. And, you know, achieving and, you know, goals and just being a better person.
Well, thank you, Lauren. And one of the things I want to say is I'm hoping and praying that you do well. I'll be praying. But once you get out of this mess, don't ever let any woman get to you. I mean, if you see something strange, walk away from it. Don't stay in it. Don't try to improve it. Just walk away from it, because there's too many men in prison and women that are serving life and life without parole sentencing because they fell into that kind of setup, and you don't want to have it happen to you.
No, you're absolutely right. Absolutely. I thank you once again.
Okay, we are now going to end this episode. Everyone, thank you for listening in. And again, please feel free to call in on Tuesdays at 12 o'clock. Voice your opinion, your feedback, your vents, anything you want to criticize. I take criticism very well. Please do call in and let's get this out in the open, because holding everything in doesn't help, as you can see, with so many people who are incarcerated. So we are now going to end this episode. I thank you all for listening in, and we are now finished.